jump up, let's get crazy. Jump up, let's get crazy. Let's get crazy. Welcome to the Round 10 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus, and I'm trying really hard this week to put on a smiley face because it's been a bit tough Supercoach-wise for our community, but I've got Faz here. Hopefully he brings some good energy to the podcast as well.
Supercoach talent lacking, energy provided.
All right, mate. Well, why don't we start off with a personal update, get the bad news out of the way, and then we can move on into the show. I'll kick us off for the week. I scored 21-24, a second week in a row, moving backwards by about 5,000 spots. I'm still in the top 20,000. Not that that's much of a consolation. Don't think I've ever been ranked this far back this late into a season. I am taking solace in the fact that hopefully, you know, Supercoach Coach just raised the game for all coaches across Supercoach, and now it's just getting harder to compete because apart from that, I am going pretty crazy. I brought in Tim Kelly this week. I was like, all right, time to bloody finally bring in Tim Kelly 2 weeks after I told everybody else to bring him in. And he goes and scores an 87. Just nothing coming up quite right. The premiums are actually doing okay, but it's the rookies that are being exposed to on field. Crouch out meant that I fielded Setterfield, scoring 29. Could have fielded Bolter with a 101. Sat on the bench. Ugh. Stocker also on field, 45. Clark, 33. Answorth, 26 with Darcy Moore out. Like, oh, God, just bad. And with that, we'll move on. Faz, how'd you go, mate?
You got me by 6 points this week. I had 21-18. Also saw a tumble of about 5,000 in the rankings out to 14,000 this week. I was pretty happy with the trades, though. I managed to turn Willem Drew and Jack Ross into Stocker and Jack McRae. So pretty thrilled to have McRae back in my team after all the success he brought me last year. And I had a bit of the same carnage down in the back line, had Darcy Moore missing, and so that meant that I ended up with both Clark and Lachie Young from the Bulldogs on field. So those are pretty poor scores there. So yeah, not a whole lot to really cheer up the mood of the weekly update. And unfortunately, I think that when we move on to leagues, it's not really looking any better. Is that right?
Yeah, unfortunately. And we did get a question from @imbecilesc on Twitter asking, you know, what's the main reason the Supercoach Coach leagues are ranked relatively lowly this year? And I think, you know, what I alluded to before, some of it was in jest, but I think some of it's pretty genuine as well. Just across the board, Supercoach strategy has definitely improved. You can tell the fact that pick selections have narrowed a fair bit today compared to 5 years ago shows that a lot of people are more risk aware and take a lot of safer bets. And so, you know, that overall increase in sort of just good competition has definitely affected our ability to stand out. I think the other main reason why the Supercoach Coach leagues aren't doing brilliantly well that we missed a lot of the breakout targets in terms of prime recommendations in the preseason. So Boak and Kelly were not as high on our radar in the forward line, and they've been fairly season-defining so far. You've got Lachie Neal in the midfield that has absolutely decimated, averaging 130 at the moment. He was a big reason. We started Whitfield, which, you know, it would have been absolutely massive, except when he's missed, we've brought on rookies that score 30, which is unfortunate. We didn't recommend Hearn too highly as well. So there's just a few different really top scorers across the field that we just happened not to nail over the preseason. And the difference these days between 10,000 and 20,000 or even 5,000 and 20,000 is pretty narrow. So it just takes missing a few of those guns to be a bit behind. And unfortunately, that's the position that we're in, but it's not something that we can't turn around. Looking at the leagues, I think the number one ranked league compared to, you know, the 70th ranked league, it's only about 3,000 points, which sounds like a lot, but it's only 180 points per coach. So over the course of, you know, the remaining 14 rounds, that's 15 points to make up per coach per round. So it's not something that we're going to necessarily struggle with for the rest of the season, but it's definitely been a little bit this harder this year compared to maybe even the previous 10. It's been one of the more challenging years, but I don't think we're necessarily giving terrible advice. It's just it's harder to nail these days with everybody else getting better. And with that long-winded explanation, we'll move on to a quick public group update. So the Supercoach Coach group is led by Michael's team, Break a Leg. He's ranked 29th overall. And when we look at the top end of our leagues, there are some people who are absolutely crushing it. So I think in our Supercoach Coach league, we have 3 in the top 100, another 4 in the top 200. So there's still some good people doing good things in our Supercoach Coach community. So congrats if you are riding high at the moment. In terms of our Patreon group, our top scorer for the group this week were the Blues' team, Blues 1970 with 2355. And Aiden, who's our overall leader of the Patreon group, also scored 2355. So he tied with Blues 1970. And Aiden's currently ranked 173rd overall. So congrats to Aiden, who is currently in the running for our cash prize at the end of the year. All right, Faz, with that, let's move on to the main show now. And we'll start off by talking about the rookies, which is really what everyone wants to hear about this week. And unfortunately, it's because of bad reasons, not because there's too many good options. There's just no options almost this week. Got a question here from @CrazyTaylors from Twitter. With a lack of bubble boys this week, who would be the best one-game rookies to jump on? Or would you consider going a week later on a bloke like Stocker, for example? So why don't we go through the different rookie options, Faz? There were 2 blokes on the bubble on the weekend that actually played. So Jonathan Marsh for the Saints, 56 and 57, his 2 scores, 163K defender, and Rupert Wills, 36 and 80, his 2 scores, 166K midfielder. So the 2 blokes on the bubble that we'll start off with, Faz, both 160+K. That's not good news, is it?
Not at all, really. Given the issues that we're all having with cash generation, a lot of the guys that we're looking to trade out are sort of only barely hitting 250, let alone the sort of 300, which has been the benchmark previous seasons. So to go from a guy at 250 down to a 160K rookie, you're only netting yourself 90K there. And to say 250K, that's even a bit generous, I think, for a few of the players that might be options. You know, just looking at Setterfield here right now, he's at 223. Don't have Parker in my team anymore, but I can't imagine he's much more than that. He'd probably be around the 230 mark. So be quite reluctant to be making a trade, particularly if the person I'm trading out is still playing. If it's only going to net me sort of $80,000-$90,000, it really doesn't seem like enough. Straight off the bat, I'm pretty inclined to put a line through both of our bubble boys this week.
I don't think you really want to be paying any more than 130K for rookies at this point in the season, unless you're quite sure they're going to be high scoring. So Marsh being a key back scoring in the 50s is a definite no-no. And Wills, having scored 80, I suppose, looks a little bit tempting. But
I did see, though, I think Wills was a late in this week for Dugowie. So yeah. Job security probably a little bit improved with that score. That's going to help him to sort of hold his spot in the team. But that was sort of the risk with Haitley at GWS, is that both of his games have been late ins. And as we all know, the very next week gets dropped straight out of the side. So being the late in, you're very much the last one in the team. And I'd be pretty reluctant to spend 160K on a guy that not even sure is going to play beyond the following week.
And he's around 13 buy play. And because we're so close to the buys, you're basically having to stomach keeping them for the entirety of that bye period, or at least until the buys. Like, if he plays each of the next 3 games, he only gets 3 price increases before his bye. So you either hold him, you know, at 270K or whatever he gets to, or you trade him out having only had 3 price increases and having already started out at, you know, 165 sort of K. So rather take a punt on a cheaper debutante. And so let's get to the debutantes, which, I mean, at least we have some good news about. By my count, we've got 9 debutantes on the weekend, which is at least some consolation. Why don't we start off in the back line and then we'll just work through these guys positionally, Faz. Garner, he scored 65 on the weekend, 124K listed in the back line for Port Adelaide. A second-year player. What are your thoughts about Garner?
Pretty attracted to Garner as a trade-in option. He was a pretty low pick in the draft in his year. He was picked 60. They got him in as a midfielder, but they've used him as a half-back flanker the whole time at Port Adelaide. He was doing some good things in the Sandful last year until the second half of his season was ruled out with a shoulder reconstruction. So I think he probably would have pushed pretty hard for a debut last year if not for that injury. The concern, though, is the sort of the rotating door of young players they've had at Port Adelaide recently. Just this week gone by, we saw all three of Todd Marshall, Willem Drew and Aiden Johnson dropped from the team and saw four young players come in with Joel Garner along with Billy Frampton, Joe Attlee, who we'll get to in a moment, and Zach Butters. So it seems like Ken Hinckley's sort of playing a bit of musical chairs at the moment to see what the best fit is for the team. But that being said, the job security concerns aside, I think that Garner could be a pretty good scorer. As you mentioned, 65 on debut. That was from only 13 disposals and 11 of those were kicks. He's got a pretty good left boot and I think they like to get the ball into his hands and use him coming out of the back line. So I think he could be a pretty good option if he can secure a spot in that best 22.
I think they got rid of a tall and brought in another tall. They dropped out two forward/mids and brought in two forward/mids. So it looks like he was most likely there to replace Burton, who's listed as 1-2 weeks with a hamstring. So that's just the only thing that you really need to keep an eye on. But otherwise, as Faz said, scoring-wise actually looks pretty good. Intercept marker, good skills, lower disposal count than you'd ideally like, but at least he uses it well when he does get it. How about Hinge, mate, who plays for the Brisbane Lions? Similar price, or same price, 124K defender. In his third year of AFL, scored 56 on debut. How do you reckon he stacks up?
Yeah, I think they like to use Hinge a bit more through the midfield, despite the defensive position in Supercoach. Only had the 14 disposals, 10 of which were handballs, so didn't get a whole lot of the pill in his first game. I do like his size. He's 190 centimetres and 84 kilos, so got the right body for AFL football. By my read, it might have been Zach Bailey was the player that he came in to replace. So Zach Bailey's out for the medium term with another hamstring injury. So there's reasonable prospects. I think Reece Matheson might have got a week for striking this week as well. So there's short term, I'd say his job security looks reasonable. His scoring probably I don't think will be quite as good as Joel Garner, but I think, again, might be a reasonable option if you're looking for a downgrade in the back line.
If he is named for another game, don't really hate the selection. As you mentioned, Faz, at least he's playing in the midfield, so potentially more likely to get a few more touches of the pill than if he was playing as a backline player. Harrison Petty, Faz, he's a guy that I think pretty happy to just rule out straight away. He's 161K, scored 52 on debut, but he's a defensive tall, so unlikely to get a whole bunch of Supercoach points and therefore not worth the extra dosh.
Yeah, I agree on that. I think at 160K key defender, that's a pretty clear no for me.
How about Attlee for Port? Another one of those debutants on the weekend, 124K midfielder. What are your thoughts on him, mate?
Yeah, so I think not technically the debut for Attlee because he played three games back in 2017 in his first year at Port Adelaide. The name sounds familiar, and that's because it is a relation. He's the younger brother of North Melbourne's Sean Attlee, so good football pedigree. It was affected by injury all throughout last year, and what I do like about what happened to him last year is despite missing most of the year with injury, or I think being in and out of the team with injury, Port Adelaide still went and signed him to a two-year contract extension. So to me, that's giving him a bit of a tick of approval there that they do rate him as a player despite his bit of a tough run with injuries. Sort of plays a bit of that inside midfield role. So Ollie Wines is out for another 3 to 4 weeks. I think that that could be down the track, might push him out of the team. So I think he could be sort of fighting for a spot in the side with, you know, a guy like Butters. So unfortunately, we don't have Dunny on the side this week. I think it'd be a helpful one to to maybe illuminate us on just what Attlee's job security is like. But I do like the fact that he was a pretty high pick in the draft. They got games into him in his first year, sort of showed him there's a show of faith with the contract extension despite the injuries. And I think they'd be keen to blood him for a few more games and, you know, see just what he's got in him.
Brad Ebert is also out from the Port midfield. Is still listed as 2 to 3 weeks as of injury list being updated. Robbie Gray is listed as a test for his hand injury. If he comes in, you'd think that he'd come in at the expense of either Butters or Attlee. You would think that Attlee, being a bit more mature-bodied, being stronger in sort of the clearances, contested possessions, tackling and that sort of stuff, that he would be a little bit more likely to retain his spot than Butters, who has just recently been dropped. But it's hard to say. Butters started the season and did pretty well. So team sheets will be pretty illuminating, especially if Gray gets named. But you'd think one of the two of them will have a decent shot of holding their spot if they can keep Drew out for at least the next few weeks. Now, next option, we've got another midfielder. Oscar Baker scored 41 as a 124K midfielder. He is a second-year player for Melbourne, plays very much on the outside, gets involved in scoring chains.
I saw a bit of the Melbourne game, and I saw him pop up for a couple of intercept marks. I was like, oh, here we go. We've got a nice downgrade option, but I think I must have seen just about every bit of play he was involved in because, as you mentioned, 41 Supercoach, only 10 disposals. That's pretty low numbers there. They did say that he was pressing for selection throughout most of last year with his form for Casey in the VFL, and it was a hamstring injury at the end of the year that pushed him out. That being said, though, you would have thought if he was that close to selection, he might have got games already. So I'm a little bit concerned about Baker, whether he sort of has all that many games in him, and even if he does, it looks like scoring is probably a bit of a concern as well. So, you know, and I guess I should probably say we're not going to get too many rookies at this time of year that have great job security, but with the job security concerns combined with scoring concerns, it's probably not somebody that I'm looking at all that closely this week.
Yep, agree with that. Definitely want to see at least another game from Baker. Next bloke, Darcy Fort, scored 105, so the top scorer out of our debutants. We were definitely wary of him in the preseason, but after a poor JLT, he was omitted from most starting teams. 117K Ruckman came in as a replacement for Asava Radagalia, notably behind Ryan Abbott, who's another second-string Ruckman who came in place of Stanley. I think Sav is a fair clear in over Fort. He should probably return next week. And Stanley has clearly got the number one ruck mantle. So job security doesn't look great, but that 105 means that he will attract some. 25-year-old mature-aged recruit, and after 3 goals on the weekend, has actually shown some chops around the ground and up forward. There are limited teams out there that will get to potentially use him as a downgrade target, but potentially if you're trading out Riley O'Brien type.
Yeah, I think that's probably the only circumstance. I wouldn't be doing sort of a binds to Fort type move because presumably you're going to continue playing Max Gorn and Brody Grundy over over Darcy Fort. Collingwood, Melbourne and Geelong all have the round 13 bye. So
I'm almost certain he gets dropped anyway after this week.
Yeah, well, Sav, not even on the injury list. They just had him as managed. So
next player, Robbie Young, another mature age player, 24-year-old in his first year playing league footy, 117K forward line player, basically a mirror of Parker, I suppose, 69 on debut, so one of the highest scoring players. Faz, what do you reckon about his job security?
I guess just touching on the scoring first, I think 69 looks good, but then when I see 2 goals and 2 goal assists, I'm a little bit more concerned that such a strong game only gets him a score of 69. Don't know whether he and Parker, if that's the plan, that they play in the same team. You know, they've got a few of those sort of small forwards at St Kilda already with guys like Gresham. I think he came into the side for Ben Long, who's been a good guy who sort of seems to come in and out of the team quite a bit across his career. So I think that there's a bit too much competition for that spot. Maybe people would be thinking Parker gets dropped, but I think that just with that sort of competition for that same spot in the side, and you know, despite the 69 on the weekend, as Parker has sort of demonstrated for us, that small forward role is really just not a particularly lucrative one when it comes to getting the points.
Agreed with that assessment. Begley, 168k forward, plays for your mob, Faz. The Bombers, third year player. When I flicked through the prospectus, it said absolutely terrible stat sheet. And based on that and his starting price point, it'd be hard to pick him.
Nickname is the Fridge, Begley. He's built quite solidly, as the name Fridge suggests.
Okay.
But I haven't been all that impressed. I did go down and watch a VFL game a few weeks ago, and I'll just say I was a bit surprised to see him named in the side after his performance in the VFL.
You did mention that on debut.
Yeah, so I think he's another one of those. I think he's played a couple of games in previous years, so I think that's why his price is up at the 160 mark. I think that ideally Essendon don't play him. He's sort of a bit of a stopgap as a key forward. We need somebody there to support Danaher, and ideally that's going to be a Mitch Brown type or a Sean McKernan, and I'm very thrilled to see on the injury list both those guys listed as available from their respective injuries. So I would be fairly surprised if the Fridge is still in the side this week.
All right, mate. Well, we've been through quite a few of these debutants. Now, if you had to do an early downgrade to one of these players, how would you rate maybe a 1-2-3, Faz?
Yeah, sure thing. So I'll just mention it's not going to change my 1-2-3, but Ben King also debuted on the weekend for the Gold Coast, but problems are even more defined there at 184,000 at pick 6 in last year's draft, so he's not really an option. The three that I would be considering this week are Joel Garner and Joe Attlee from Port Adelaide, and then Mitchell Hinge from Brisbane. Of those three, I'd probably say Attlee number one. I think that there's a spot in the side for him, and being the highest draft pick of the three, I think that there's a bit more incentive for Port Adelaide to keep putting games into him. I do quite like the look of Joel Garner. I'm just concerned with Ryan Burton coming back from injury and what impact that has. And I think that we'll get a bit more information on Hinge this week, seeing team sheets. So I probably put it in that order. So Attlee one, Hinge two, Garner three. And that's not all that helpful for anyone who's looking for a forward, because there's no forwards amongst that group.
Yeah, I agree completely. Job security-wise, I think Attlee and Hinge are the two that stand out. I think I give Attlee the slight edge and the slight scoring edge. And then after that, probably the Garner Young type players where, I mean, their first score is all right, their price point's good, but job security is very much a question mark. And then blokes that I wouldn't touch at all are the expensive guys. Fort and Baker at this stage wouldn't touch either. A few other blokes on the bubble that if they get named will go up in price after another score. So you've got Braden Ham from Essendon, Declan Kilty, who basically was dropped for Harrison Petty. So he played rounds 7 and 8. We've got Dara Joyce for St. Kilda. Josh Rotham played rounds 3 and 4. He's a chance apparently to come in for Lewis Jetta this week. Jared Brander from West Coast played rounds 1 and 6. And then, of course, you got Jackson Hatley playing rounds 5 and 7. But to be frank, I think I'd rather take a punt on a guy who just debuted on the weekend and hopefully will string a few games together rather than blokes who have already shown that they're in just to sort of fill a role, which unfortunately at this stage, all those rookies look like they're in that sort of spot. I think Hatley and Rotham are the two that we've probably talked to a little bit more in previous episodes. Both could be in for just a single week and then be as quickly out. So just keep that in mind. As tempting as they are, unless there's a serious injury, I probably would take a punt on some of those debutants that we talked about. And then to wrap up the original question from at Crazy Taylors, would we consider a row bottom or stocker type who have gone up in price once instead of a fresh debutant? So James Rowbottom for Sydney, his three games read 46, 32 and 24. 132K is his current price point. And then Stocker, 21, 57, 45, 148K. Wary that Cade Simpson potentially comes back this week as well.
Probably. I would have Stocker quite a bit over Rowbottom in my assessment. I think that he keep getting games. I certainly hope so, because I brought him in last week.
I'd be wary that he's 148K currently. And to be frank, I would probably take a risk on the debutants if they get named again ahead of picking Stocker.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I just in the row bottom stock.
Yes,
I'd agree. I'd still put the debutants above him just on price considerations.
Awesome. All right, let's move on to the next question. This one's from Chris Slater asking whether or not this is the week to cash in a Riley O'Brien type. And he's brought up the point that you can take the on-field points now, or if you hold Riley O'Brien until the round 13 bye, he can stand in for Gorn and Grundy as well. So there's that consideration. But to be frank, I think this week for Riley O'Brien owners, you have the perfect out. You can trade down to a dud rookie in your rucks and really not care too much and use that downgrade cash to get you through this week where we really are picking rookies with very limited confidence. And I'm saying that, unfortunately, without Riley O'Brien in my team, so it pains me to say that, but if I had Riley O'Brien, this would probably be the week that I dealt him in, unless you had a lot of cash in bank and weren't forced to do that. What do you reckon, Faz?
Completely agree. I was sort of looking at it thinking, you know, break even's 84. He's been scoring about that mark. So, you know, it's not like you need to get rid of him this week, but that's a very good point that I think we've said this a few weeks in a row, we're scraping the bottom of the barrel really this time. Yeah. I can hear the scrapes.
Now, next question here is from Jordan Eastley from Facebook asking whether or not he can consider bringing in Bynes for Parker. He's got Riley O'Brien as well, but he's thinking that, you know, if he trades Bynes in now, when he's ready to trade out Riley O'Brien, you can always pivot Riley O'Brien out through the forward line and bring back Bynes into the rucks. And I don't mind that as an option as well. If you already have some cash in bank and you don't need Riley O'Brien's cash to take you to a full upgrade, then potentially that Bynes option sounds pretty good as well. And it just gives you an extra week to look at your downgrade options. So I think both are good options. Unfortunately, both rely on having Riley O'Brien in your team, which I don't. Faz, thoughts on that?
I think that's a pretty good option to go. Bynes. I guess just be cautious that if you're like me and carrying a few duds in the team, like I've already got Burgess. I know that Darcy Moore is not a certainty to come back this week. I'd be a little bit hesitant to bring myself down to two non-playing rookies in the forward line bench.
All right, next question. We're now going to discuss some upgrading now that we're off the rookies. Hopefully that was enough for you to digest and make some decisions on in terms of downgrade options. In terms of upgrading, we've got the question here from Liam Lo-Rico on Facebook. Is it a wise option to trade out Baker to Hooley via DPP? He doesn't have the funds to afford a higher price defender as there are no rookies to downgrade to. A lot of people are facing this at the moment. We discussed this briefly last week. Do you go for the perfect option versus the imperfect option to continue upgrading? And I'm very, very much at a position of taking the compromise option and hoping that that works out. Just sitting on your hands or not upgrading or, you know, trying to do three downgrades to hit the perfect player, you're really putting yourself in a compromised position.
I think broadly I'm in agreement with what you've just said there, and considering specifically Basher Hooley as an option, the fact that you can get Basher Hooley for quite a significant discount, that he's at 470, you know, 50 grand less than Laird, 50 grand less than Sicily, 70 grand less than Luke Ryan.
The other thing to keep in mind is a lot of people are fast reaching the point where they are not going to have cash generation enough to upgrade to a fully premium team. So you're going to have to take a compromise position somewhere. I'm personally looking at my team going, well, I've traded out most of the blokes who are above 300K out of my side. The guys I have left, like there's not a lot of trade out targets left. If you try and hit a full premium this week, maybe even next week, and you still have two positions left on field and you only have 250K players left, at what stage do you go, I stop downgrading or I have to do a triple downgrade in order to finance one upgrade? I don't think it's the worst position to trade in an underperforming premium so that you can at least finish a full premium team and then down the track maybe look at an opportunistic side swap to move them onto a full premium. We just might have to look for alternate strategies to get that ultra premium team, or potentially, you know, not even be able to get there this year at all. So it's just something to keep in mind there. By sacrificing Lloyd for Hooley, for example, you might help yourself achieve the next upgrade target as well. Next question from @McConnellBrock asking whether or not he should upgrade Goldie to Grundy or Baker or Drew Tahini or Marshall. Now, I teed this one up next because I think it relates to the previous question. So if we're at a point where we're going to struggle to upgrade to a full premium team, I'd argue that using the cash to upgrade Goldie to Grundy is not as sound as using the cash to up to getting a rookie off field and getting a premium in, even if they are, you know, a suboptimal premium. So the other trade example that's been brought up a fair bit this week is, do I trade Zach Williams out? Now, Zach Williams is listed as a test this week?
That's right, test for the hamstring.
Hamstring tightness, like he might play, but even if he misses, you're trading a guy who was averaging 95 before he missed a half of football. Like, he's actually scored 75 in half of football. So he's closer to averaging 100 so far for the season. Even if you can upgrade him to Jake Lloyd, you're only getting like 15 points more on field for the remainder of the year. Whereas if you look at Baker or Drew, you know, you're potentially talking about the difference between a 70 to a 95 type averaging player in the Heaney or a Marshall. That's 25 points of improvement there. So when we're considering the fact that we might run out of cash generation full stop, I think you're better off upgrading your team to full premium instead of trying to upgrade your team to ultra premium and then having gaps on field at the end of the exercise. Does that make sense, Faz?
Completely agree there. I think as much as it would pain you being a Goldstein owner to be seeing the scores that Grundy's putting out, I know that Baker has actually had a pretty good run of scores, but to say sort of the difference between a rookie, you know, putting the rookie scoring at 70, I think is being a bit generous, really. As we saw in the week just gone, the rookies have been really scoring some pretty deplorable scores this year. You've really got to be in line for, you know, 30s and 40s if you're willing to play, particularly some of these, you know, second batch of rookies that have come in as downgrade options. I think you want to be doing everything you can to move them off the field. And if that means sacrificing a bit in quality, if it's sort of the Hooley as the upgrade target, I think you do it. And I definitely think you do it if your choice is between really what's a side swap to go Goldstein to Grundy versus a true upgrade, bringing, you know, doing a Drew to Heaney type trade.
Mm-hmm. Next question. This one is from Steve, one of our patrons, asking, how do we separate Whitfield and Lloyd? Clearly, both should be in our teams, but he can only afford to bring one in this week. I personally am going to say Whitfield. He has had some absolutely monster scores, a 152 and a 170 included in that. He had the 45 where he basically went down with such a bad corky he couldn't play for two more rounds. So you take that out, this guy is absolutely slaying it. Lloyd is still playing that seagulling backline player, whereas Whitfield, like, he's moved up into the wing. I think he gets more opportunity at racking up a high and consistent disposal count than potentially a backline player as well. I don't know if it's that obvious. Maybe I haven't had Lloyd enough previously in my teams, but Whitfield for me easily. Faz?
Have we got any concerns that Whitfield misses any more games with injury? I guess that'd be my only concern in sort of highly recommending Whitfield over Lloyd. I think Lloyd's pretty consistent in terms of getting himself on the park. Another factor to consider, and obviously this is very team dependent, but I think that Lloyd's a bit friendlier on the byes. I know that Whitfield obviously is sharing a bye with Williams, but he's also the same round as Adelaide. So that's Brody Smith and Rory Laird. So that's just something to keep in mind. If you have a few of those guys in your team already, I'd be just be careful of that one. But I think you're right that Whitfield does probably have the higher ceiling at 170. That's nuts. Like, there's really only sort of a handful of guys in the whole league that have that sort of scoring capacity. That's sort of the knock that we give midfielders like a Zach Merritt, that, you know, if you can go big, you can get 145, but he can't get 170.
Yeah. Well, he's averaging more than Merritt.
we might stop that analogy.
All right, let's finish with underrated v overrated, Faz. This one's coming from one of our patrons, Jeff Lane. Is Tom Stewart worth a look at as a trade-in option if you already have Hearn, Lloyd and Whitfield? What an amazing back line Jeff has. But if you're in that particular spot, definitely think Tom Stewart looks like a pretty tasty option. He's averaging 104 for the year so far. He is in the top six defenders so far, and Geelong continue to have a good run home. So I don't anticipate him struggling to get points in the finish. yeah, if anything, I think he's gotten even better compared to last year. I'm personally a pretty big fan of the selection. In terms of underrated v overrated, Faz, do you have his selection stats up there?
He's in 7% of teams at about 15,000 picks. So compare that. Hearn's in 14% of teams, Whitfield 31% of teams, Jake Lloyd 38%.
I also think that in terms of the round 13 buy, he's the clear, like, standout third option. So you've got Hearn and Lloyd from Sydney and West Coast being your top two from that particular buy round. Then the other teams you have are Melbourne, not really fantasy relevant from a backline point of view. Collingwood, Howe and Crisp aren't doing brilliant. Brisbane Lions, Harris Andrews, Witherden, again.
Daniel Rich.
Oh, yeah, Rich probably is probably the next best. So I think you got Rich and Stewart competing for that sort of next spot for third highest for around 13 buy player. So another potential reason if you're looking to spread your buys around. I know if you don't have Hearn already, he's going to be pretty hard to bring in having just scored a 160 plus. So Stewart can be your sort of second round 13 buy player potentially.
Yeah, I guess specifically for Jeff, who's mentioned that he does have both Hearn and Lloyd, it might be a bit too much, so just worth checking, you know, the rest of your team to make sure you can carry a donut in the back line in round 13. I would definitely go in the underrated camp when it comes to Tom Stewart. Just be wary that you will have to live with your heart in your mouth every single game because he always hobbles off the ground. Every single game. I mentioned this on the weekend when we were watching the game. He hobbles off the ground every game. You're like, oh, that's a season-ending injury. And 5 minutes later, you see him just drift across a pack and take an intercept mark or something.
All right. Finally, captaincy options for the weekend. I'm just going to whip through this pretty quickly because we're actually gone for a while now. In terms of vice captaincy options, I think the number one this week is McRae, which, Faz, you'd be happy to hear after you just brought him in. His last five against North Melbourne, all hitting the ton, which is fantastic. 153 is his last score against North Melbourne. I think he's definitely a fantastic option this week. And then probably the second is Grundy against Sydney. His last game against them was not too long ago, round 20 of 2018, where he scored 167 against the Swannies. So definitely a good option there as well. In terms of who you might then back up with the captaincy, I've got probably the number one, Cripps versus St Kilda. Had a quiet one last week. Cripps is an absolute champion. When you question a champion, they tend to respond. I know most of the best players at their peak tend to do that, and Cripps certainly would fall into that bracket. 157 and 156 are his last two against St Kilda, so has had a good run against them previously as well. Followed very, very closely by Max Gawn, his last two against GWS, 160 and 156. Of course, Mumford is back into the team, so that could potentially change things a little bit, playing against the big sausage enforcer, but he surely would be a pretty great option this week as well. And then the last one is a bit of a smoky, which is not much of a smoky because he's the highest scoring player for the year so far, but that's Lachie Neal. Plays against his old side for the first time. You'd think he's going to be out there to prove a point. Faz, any comments to that?
No, I think you've done a pretty comprehensive wrap-up there. Grundy and McRae looking like the two clear standouts for me as vice-captaincy options, and I think you're bang on there with Cripper. I'm sure he's had two quiet games in his past, but that's probably when he was playing Auskick. So I would be surprised if he is doing anything below 130 this weekend.
All right, mate. And with that, we'll wrap up for the week. Thanks for coming on.
No worries. See ya.
See ya.